the platform. Step up and speak out.
You tune into ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. The name is Larry Kwedidai. It is an episode of The Platform. And it's just gone half past the hour of 7 o'clock. I'm here with you until 9 p.m. But in the first hour, we'll be having The Platform. And then the last 30 minutes, we'll be discussing TB on Health Matters. And just to remind you of just a few of the frequencies you can listen to us on: Chivu 99.8, Victoria Falls 106.5, Agueru 104.3, Bulawayo, my hometown, 106.7. And we're broadcasting out of Harare, where our frequency is 106.4. Listen to us over the internet. It's www.zfmstereo.co.zw. Download the TuneIn app. It's available for free. And just look for ZFM Stereo and you can listen to us live as in charge. And today we're streaming the show on Facebook. So just go to our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/ZFM Stereo and you can watch the proceedings as they happen in the studio. And I'll be checking out for some of your questions on that platform as well as on Twitter so that we can get you involved in the conversation. Our WhatsApp number is 0731 168 045, and our call-in number being 0772 168 045. Now, following the impact of Tropical Cyclone Idai, which hit Eastern Highlands, President Emmerson Mnangagwa on 15 March declared a state of disaster. Now, in the studio today, my guest is the chairperson of the Cabinet Committee on Environment Disaster Prevention and Management, Honorable July Moyo. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
The first question I want to ask is, there are so many numbers going around, but what is the latest update on the number of people who have died and also the number of people who are missing?
The latest update we have is 179, and this has been on now for 2 days. And the reason is we only change the numbers once we found bodies. The number of missing is 329, and again, that number has been growing steadily because now we are not able to find the other people. We have not changed for the last 2 days.
So when I look at the number 179, last week when you gave your ministerial statement, you say that there were possibly 147 bodies that had gone over to swept over to Mozambique, and some areas of the media are quoting 120. Some aid agencies are also using that number. First of all, what is the correct figure in as far as those people who have been whose bodies were ended up in Mozambique?
No, the correct figure that we have been given by Mozambicans, they were able to identify 8 people.
8?
8. And those people, they buried them, but before burying them, they took pictures which they sent back to us to see whether we could identify who those people were. The villagers and other entities were not able to identify any of those people. And so we think that the majority of what we were saying, 147, it turned out it was 147 households. And that's why we are now talking about the figure of 329. But even this figure of 329, we think, is not the total number, because people are buried under rubble and stones.
That is an aspect that we're going to go into a little bit later, because that is there's so many implications around that. But carrying on in as far as this concerned, are we saying that I remember last week you started talking about the work that needed to be done in Kopai and Risutu in terms of if there were bodies there, some of our citizens were still there. Are we saying this work is not being done anymore?
That work has to be done. What we have not been able to do is to bring dogs that can sniff, and we don't have dogs that could sniff bodies who are buried under rubble or under stones, because our dogs are mostly trained for banje or gold or diamonds, but we have not trained the dogs that can sniff bodies. We are now in a position to announce that the dogs that can do that have arrived. The first bunch of dogs have arrived, and we are dispatching them this evening to Mtare, and we hope that by 6, 7 AM, they will be on their way to the areas that you have mentioned, Kopa especially, Machongwe, and to Situ area, and to follow up all the way to Vimba, which is on the Mozambican border. There is another team which is coming, and so we believe that these teams will be able to identify and sniff under the rubble, which is mostly at Kopa, and the boulders and stones that have been dumped at the place where we used to have a police camp, where we used to have agritech people and a lot of other people who were staying there.
So the question that I guess this will apply to both sides in Rusutu and Kopa and the other places you've mentioned, as well as in Shimani Mani, where some bodies may be buried. A question that was asked on Twitter earlier on is that how do we come up with this number that is 329? What's the modality?
329 is based on actual interviews with families that have lost people. It is based on, for instance, at one school where the headmaster, three teachers were taken and 39 children. These are identified people. And so we are cautious about the how to identify those who are missing, and we rely on the villagers giving us the actual names of homesteads, including the family members. But what we are not able to know is, for instance, it's a trading area. Kopa is a trading area. This is where most of the people were buying bananas, and it's also an artisanal mining area. And so we cannot know the total number. Nor do we know, for instance, when we say a headmaster, we know the name of the headmaster, but we might not know the total number of the people who are staying in that household. So we are cautious to increase the number without being told accurately.
So in the context of that, the main key areas is so far as interviews. There are no other forms that we have done, for example. Of course, you're talking about the dogs that are coming in right now. But, of course, when we sort of look at some victims, or rather some people being affected, may have been suffering from all sorts of trauma and so forth. Do you wait a couple of days? Because sometimes they might give inaccurate information as far as what they think is the number of people that were there.
Well, inaccuracy is bound to happen. You know, people are operating under pressure. Sometimes they tell you that their person is missing. In fact, that person might reappear. But we started having some bodies in Ngangu, for instance, in the Chimani Mani Urban Center. The numbers increased because we were now getting some people from under the rubble. And we were identifying, because sometimes you see these big flies and people suspect that maybe there's a body underneath. They start digging, and we got some bodies using this type of method. But so in Ngandu, we think also that there are bodies still buried underneath. In Machongwe, where there was a township which was also wiped out, we think there are bodies there. But more particularly in Kopa and all the way to through the rivers Nyaode and Risutu, where they meet to Mozambique.
So when we look at it, because a lot of these areas are very isolated, so it's very different from most urban areas where houses are close to each other. The baby issues of censuses and so forth, and whatever methodology that is around having estimates of how many people were in that area, is that used as a factor? And given that, if that is used as a factor, some people are saying, okay, the government's number of 179 is very very suppressed. There could be as many as 1,000 people, because those areas are so have got places that are so remote from each other. And looking at, say, for example, election patterns, how many people voted in those areas, it gives the impression that there may be more people than the government is saying.
Well, we have been going around these areas. In Chikukwa, there are some people who died there in the Chikukwa area, and we believe that there are some people maybe who might be buried. But looking at the pattern of the mudslides and where they hit the most, we believe the areas that we are telling you are the most hard hit, and they also happen to be urbanized areas. In Ngangu, for instance, which was hard hit, the avalanche came and it went through an urbanized area, a densified area, and that's where the impact was most severe. So is the Machongwe area, there was a settlement there, urbanized or densified area, and this is where things happened. And copper, again, as I said, copper was almost a very high hive of activities in a centralized area, and these are the places where it was most hit. I traveled by helicopter from Wengezi to Skyline, which all the bridges in between there are hit. But when you look at the sites, the homes, they don't seem to have suffered as much as the areas that I'm talking about. And so we know that some people have been lost in remote areas, but the center, epicenter of these things are in the area that I've talked about.
0731 168 045. Do get in touch with us on our number 0731 168 045, and I'll be opening it up to the to your phone lines in just a bit on 0772 168 045. Now, when we look at something of this nature, around the 4th of March, we knew that there was a cyclone that was developing out in the Indian Ocean, and you know, the weather experts that we use, we work with the United Nations and SADC and so forth, is stated by the government, reputable weather systems, the Meteorological Services Department had indicated that specific four provinces were going to be affected. The question that is being asked by many people, fellow citizens, why did we not react with urgency to move people to higher grounds before, given that we knew that the level of the devastation that the storm was coming with?
That's precisely the problem. In the other provinces, Masvingo, Midlands, Marsh East, where the path of this cyclone was taking place, people in fact moved to a higher ground, and the death toll is much less. For instance, in one province there's only 5, in another only 1. But when we then say to the people in Chimanimani, move to higher ground, that is the higher ground that gave in. Remember, most people died because of the mudslides. The mountains just fell on them. And so if you had moved to higher ground and that higher ground came down on you, you had no way of surviving. We did in fact tell people to move to higher ground. Both through yourselves, you were announcing this, and as media, we actually sent official letters to our civil protection units at provincial level, in the province, in the districts, and through them all to the villages, because we have a system of civil protection which goes to the villages through the chiefs, through the headmen, through the village heads. And those precautions that we thought were survival precautions actually turned out, in the case of Chimanimani, the death knell.
So we're saying that there was an error in preparation, not so much preparation, because, but rather in calculating what this storm was, especially given that it was a slow-moving storm and was likely going to pour a lot of water.
We knew that it was going to pour a lot of water. As I say, if you went to Chimanimani and you moved along the valley, which destroyed all the bridges, but you don't have too much depth, because the people are built on high ground, and those high grounds did not give in. The people who suffered the most, starting at the St. Charles Luanga Secondary School, which is run by the Catholics, they are on high ground, but above that high ground, from the top of the mountain, it gave in and came rushing on the students who were in the dining room. So the two children who died were in the dining room, but the school is way high up. It is not affected by running water per se. It was affected by mudslides, which came from the mountain, which is where they are nearest to. So again, from Skyline, as you go down to Nyaode River, people on the side of the mountains who have their houses there did not suffer a lot. It is only in these urbanized areas where the mudslides came down from the higher up and they took everybody. That is where, so it was not a miscalculation. We just didn't know the nature of that calamity, how it was going to come. We have never experienced a situation where the mountains just give in.
So given that sort of context, and it's very important to create that sort of context in as far as the preparation is concerned, but many people also ask, was there an option to evacuate, and was there assistance that was offered for those who wanted to?
Well, people were told you can go to high ground. People were told you can, if you think your houses are unsafe, move to schools. And there were people in Ngangu, for instance, who were in a primary school, and those survived. It was they moved away from their houses. There are people in Chimanimani Eben who are in that Chimanimani hotel. At one point there were up to 500 people in that hotel who had moved from their areas. But that worked. What I think did not work is this question of move to high ground when that high ground gave in.
You're listening to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. Before we take a quick break, 0731168045, a question here. Government is not doing enough in disaster management before and after disaster. Going to read a couple of other messages. It says that the figures of death based on registered voters in those constituencies or the estimation. Okay, I would like a question from the Elder Gio in Chitown. Can you send a question? I would like that to come across the question so that we can have the Honourable Minister to being able to respond to that. I want to, after the break, there's the aspect that was talked about, like what happens afterwards, because we've talked about the before. So we're going to take a quick break. Want to see what we did afterwards so that the nation can understand what actually happened, and if there are any reservations as far as the nation is concerned, I think they would like to get an answer from you. ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town.
This is the hottest radio station in the nation.
For first with the music.
Proudly Zimbabwean. Proudly CFM Stereo.
News, lifestyle, charts, live radio, station highlights, and much more. Get it all on cfmstereo.co.zw.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
You're still tuned into ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. We are talking about we're getting a detailed update on Cyclone Idai from the chairperson of the Cabinet Committee on Environment Disaster Prevention and Management, Honorable July Moyo. The question that I want to ask next is, after it started raining and we realized that this is turning into a disaster, before we get to the disaster point, did we have, you know, people on the ground ready to assist in case, for example, it became a cyclone, Aline? Of course, it ended up becoming a lot worse. But did we have people on the ground before to be able to assist as things went worse?
The civil protection units and civil protection committees in every district, in every local authority was alerted. The civil protection units in Chimanimani were alerted, and in fact we can say our district administrator was outside the station trying to alert people, and he was caught up. He had to leave his car to come back to Chimanimani after 2 days. So civil protection units were alert. That's why when it happened at about 11 o'clock at night, when the rains started, we already were starting to have bells ringing. And we must say our Member of Parliament Sako, who was also hooked to almost every councillor and the villagers through their village head Masabuk, they started calling him and he started alerting us. So our civil protection units, the army, the air force, The police were all on alert, and by morning on Saturday, everybody was in action. So there was an alert because we knew that Cyclone Eline previously had devastated the area. So everybody was on alert. So when Cyclone Idai hit, the civil protection units in Manicaland at the provincial headquarters was alert, and they moved very fast.
So given that sort of context, are we saying we had people on the ground? At what point did we originally have people on the ground? Was this 2 days before? Was it 10 days before? Because that also gives implications to the risk assessment before.
No, the people, when I'm talking about civil protection units, they stay in the areas where they work. We have civil protection. To give you an example, a civil protection committee in Chimanimani will include all ministries, army, police, air force, state security, agri-techs people, every head of a department will work in Chipinge. And then the NGOs who work in Chipinge, the councillors who are in Chipinge, the council staff who are in Chimanimani or in Chipinge or in other district, all are part of the civil protection system. So they are there, they are alert, they knew it was coming.
So given that sort of, this is where I talk about the risk assessment.
Mm.
We saw 2 days before what it was doing to Malawi and Mozambique before it actually got to Zimbabwe. What did we do in that period?
Well, as I said...
No, I'm talking about Chimanimani in particular.
The only thing you could do is to encourage people to say, move away from waterways, move away from low-lying areas, and they did. But when they did this, they were met at the high ground with mudslides which were coming from the higher ground. You can't do anything about it.
So this is what I'm talking about, the risk assessment. If we're saying that this is going to be there's going to be a lot of heavy rain in these areas, are we saying that we were not aware about the high ground or rather the texture of the soil, whatever the case may be, the strength of it and things of that nature from past experiences?
I would think that is probably correct, that we didn't know the amount of avalanche that it would cause. But maybe now when we look and analyze,
after
remember
the fact,
we had a tremor, as opposed to the other 2-3 cyclones that we had in that same area and did not cause that type of damage. But because we had this tremor before, maybe we should have analyzed in the manner that you are wanting to analyze now.
So the question that is asked, I just want to get the listeners also involved while we carry on with our discussion in the studio here. Do you think we have qualified people and with the required capacity to help people manage such hydrometeorological disasters? Do we have the people that can do the job?
If you ask me, any country that is qualified to do it, and they do it well, even those countries that have tornadoes every year, the Americans have tornadoes every year, and you see how many people end up dying. They have cyclones every year, and you see how many people end up dying. Each cyclone, each tornado brings different capacities that even with predictability of weather patterns, scientists, we still have people suffering. So, yes, we can say we have people who are qualified. Maybe we don't have the machines, some of them, to accurately tell us what will happen to when a cyclone hits, what will happen to the earth movement. We might not have that, but certainly we have. Right now, as I speak, we have sent our scientists, our geologists, the University of Zimbabwe has sent a very sophisticated drone to try to get to know, to understand the situation in Chimanimani, because we had not understood it and the way it shook us from this cyclone.
So the following question after that is that, given that sort of context, we will go a little bit later into what the government has learned and what it intends to do going forward, because that's an important aspect. But I will segue into the fact that disaster efforts and support and so forth in other countries. We've seen them generally led by the army. And in this, in the country, most the CPU tends to fall directly under Home Affairs, although it does incorporate all the other the rest of the heads of the department that you talked about. The question becomes, is it not then proper going forward to say, this being a sort of security event, I mean, you've got the World Health Organization, or rather the World Food Program, coming out and saying that this is almost tantamount to the kind of disaster, as though speaking specifically about Mozambique, to the kind of disasters you see, or the man-made disasters that you see in places like Yemen that are caused by war. So in this instance, the argument is, things like that, could some people arguing like, could we not have had soldiers there helping people? Maybe some people didn't want to leave, forcibly moving them out of the house so that they could save their lives. Is that a thing?
Well, soldiers respond to a war situation, and our soldiers were off the ground responding to a war situation. I told you we could not go beyond skyline. The only people who marched 30-40 kilometers to face the raging rivers and to cross them were our army. That's what you expect the army and the air force and the ZRP, our police, to do. They've done it. But should they have prepared for themselves for this type of intensity? Yes, they were ready. That's why they moved very quickly. By the time I was there, 24 hours later, our army was already mobilized. They were in the front. They were at the front. But to who heads a civil protection unit? Yeah, it will differ from one country to the other. And ours has always been civilian led, because you now sometime you have disasters. For instance, we had a mining disaster in Kadoma, where we lost in one mine 31 people. There was no need for the army to be there. The police were there, but we did not call in the army because we were now looking at miners. The Minister of Mines has trained engineers, but that is a disaster. In West Nicholson, where we lost those people in a bus disaster, where we ended up having DNAs done by the Ministry of Health together with the University of Science, National Science and Technology in Bulawayo. We did not need the army there, but the ZRP was there. So disaster management is all kinds of disasters. Hunger is a disaster, and we manage it as a disaster. But typhoid, these diseases, cholera is a disaster when it strikes you. So the army is always there, but not necessarily leading as the way they are leading today because of this type of disaster.
So you believe going forward we will still remain it as being civilian led?
It will remain in Zimbabwe as civilian led, but with the army is involved depending on what type of disaster. And the Air Force is involved depending what type of disaster. ZRP is always there because it's civilian support. Then you have health is always there because it's civilian support. Labor, social welfare is always there. So there are many actors in a disaster situation. And at any given time, when you analyze and say what type of disaster are we having, sometimes health is leading, sometimes the army is leading, as we are doing right now. At some point, their leadership will recede and somebody else leads. For instance, the issue, we are not talking about it now, the issue of psychosocial services to the people. You won't see the army being the leader, although they can also lend support.
0731 168 045. I want to ask this question though. When we look at the key priority interventions, in as far as this is concerned, take us through the ones that were implemented by government, and step by step as much as you can, that were implemented in as far as the cyclone is concerned.
Well, first, government declared a national disaster and called upon Zimbabweans, regional and international assistance. And that came in large drops by Zimbabweans, and the government is still the leader in this, in the sense that yes, Zimbabweans have given clothes, they have given food, they have given shelter, utensils, But all these are being channeled through government structures. Government itself at present immediately released 50 million in order to make sure that some of the essentials, such as opening up the roads, is done. Out of that 50 million, 30 million is going for roads opening, because we need to open roads that can lead to the areas where people are suffering. Government gave money for schools. There are schools which have been disrupted, which have been destroyed, and school by school, government allocated money. For instance, I can tell you at St. Charles Nwanga, where the dormitory was destroyed, it was given 110,000. Where the dining room was completely destroyed, it was given more money than the dormitory. So government is taking the lead. But through the mobilization of government, through government, for instance, the road opening of roads, the Minister of Transport working with contractors in the area, they have been able to open roads, open bridges where these had been destroyed. And when it comes to hospitals, government gave some money. We have 3 months supply almost in all the areas. All the clinics have been restocked by using helicopters. The first helicopters that were being used there were Air Force helicopters. That is government. The police, the burials, the police are in charge of the burials. I can mention that there is no government department which is not very active in leading this coordination. The Ministry of Youth are mobilizing, for instance, the youth that are offloading the food that is coming from everywhere at every depot. They have been mobilized by the Ministry of Youth, and they are doing this freely and yet mobilized by the Ministry of Youth. Social welfare, apart from receiving food and non-food items, they are also into counseling. Everywhere we have set up this social counseling centers. They are working with the churches, they are working with NGOs, they are working with the officials from the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education. As you know, they have trained psychologist counselors in most of their schools. So government, my own ministry is very busy, because we are thinking we have to provide shelter. So our public works department, our physical planning department, all of them, I can't think of any government department which is not working very hard in Manicaland. In fact, my colleague Chief Marshal Shiri was saying to Vice President Chiwenga when we saw him this evening, say, you know, for the first time I now know civilians can work as hard as and as organized as the army, because he saw them working in Manicaland.
And speaking of the civilians, there were so many civilians that came up with all sorts of support, private individuals and people of that nature, and even international partners. I'm just going to read some of here. For example, the United Kingdom is, to the whole region, it must be said, is given 18 million, and the British public having raised 8 million in a day. How is this being distributed when it gets here?
All the monies are channeled through the Ministry of Finance. The Ministry of Finance is a special account for disaster management. It is not opened because of this cyclone. It is permanently there because the President said from the time he took over, I want transparency in the operations of disaster management. So indeed, in the operations of all our monies. So we have an account in the Ministry of Finance. Then the Ministry of Local Government, which is the coordinator of civil protection, has an account, but we encourage people to deposit in the Ministry of Finance account, and the account in the Ministry of Local Government is replenished by finance, so accountability. Then we have opened temporary deposit accounts in all the provinces, at the provincial headquarters and in every district, and these must report back to the Minister of Finance for what they would have received and what they are spending. That is about money. We encourage everybody, the embassies who are donating to us are putting in that account. Then we have goods and services, goods especially. We are bringing goods here in Harare, and we store them at the Air Force Base, Manyame Air Force Base. We have opened a warehouse there. The reason why we opened there is because we are receiving a lot of goods from outside the country, and we clear those goods and we store them there. Then we move them to the outlying areas of, especially in Chimanimani, but also don't forget that Zaka, Pikita, Gutu, Chivuseke, Mvuma were also hit. And then in Manicaland, there's only one district which was not hit, which is Makoni. The rest have been hit, so we are moving things to those areas also. So in Manicaland, we have opened at the World Vision Warehouse. World Vision is an international organization, an NGO, and working with them, they have given us their premises, and we are putting there. There are people who receive, and there are people who dispatch, and at the end of the day we want to match to see whether what we received is matching what we have dispatched, and those are two different teams. And at every forward depot that we have created, and we have created three main ones at Wengezi, in Chipinge, and at Silver Stream, there are people who receive and there are people who dispatch. And then the 26 receiving points in Chimanimani, for instance, we also have army personnel, we have social welfare or Ministry of Youth, a Ministry of Women. We encourage people who are giving, say, food. If they bring a truck to Mtare, they register with us. They are dispatched to, say, Chipinge. And Chipinge says, go to such a place where you will find people who are waiting for you. We encourage people to go and see the distribution for themselves, and then come back and report to whoever will have given them the goods. And we are happy. Some of them have done it. I use INSCO, because the day they came with 9 trucks, we encouraged them. We had opened a road from Nyanyazi to Biriwiri. We said, please go and see how it is done. And they went and they came back and they were all smiles.
So we had a lot of people who contributed.
Yes.
And the question that will be asked next is to say, how do we know the accountability around what we've contributed? And even if it's money, from other countries, how do we know what's been used for what? Is there somewhere where we can keep track of it? Will there be an audit that's going to show us? Where can we find this information?
Well, this information, for instance, if you went to Manicaland, they can give you what they spent up to Saturday, the 23rd. In terms of monies that were deposited in the temporary deposit account, I can tell you they went through, and we have meetings where we invite the NGOs who are working in Manicaland. They come together. The people who are keeping the accounts tell us what has come from what source and how much has been used for what purpose. Then we have another one where, as I said, what has been received. If people have come through us, and we encourage people to come through us, then what has been dispatched. We encourage people to see where we are dispatching, because if we have blind spots, we'll end up dispatching to one area when others are waiting. Fortunately, this time everything that was being dispatched, either as medicine or as food, only went through the aeroplanes. And these aeroplanes at the aerodrome, these helicopters, were coordinated by the Air Force. Air Commodore Chiganze, working with somebody from Executive Air, for instance, Executive Air here in Charles Springs. He had two planes, but these are fixed wings. And the gentleman who was in charge ended up being one of the coordinators with Air Commodore Chiganze of what flight was going, what it was carrying. So that is kept also by as many people as ours who are not government. And this is the transparency that we want.
But then you understand that there were, say, for example, people in the United Kingdom who gave whatever they gave to Zimbabwe. And, okay, they may have come through a government. So it's probably not a brilliant example. But, for example, there were people who set up a GoFundMe account. or what? A GoFundMe, an online crowdsourcing platform. Yeah. They put in their $10, their $100. Is there a way that after that $80,000 that was sent, that was raised, say in $8 remotely, I can find out what happened to that money?
Only if they've come through us. There will always be chances. People use these calamities to enrich themselves. That cannot be taken away. But if you come through government, either you put your money in the Ministry of Finance or in any of those temporary deposit account, I can assure you that all the monies will be accounted for.
The one thing that has been coming up a lot as a question is, I'm going to read this from a question that came up here on Twitter. Sidney Matuta, thank you very much for getting in touch. Please, Minister, can we organize, when we organized ourselves to help our fellow countrymen, there was no ZANU or MDC. Why are you hijacking this noble idea? We are one when we... So the question that is being asked is, politicization of donations. What's happening there? Because there has been accusations of that happening.
Well, accusations will always be there. But we are working with all the parties that are willing to help. After all, somebody was saying to me this evening, you can't not go and find out a ZANU-PF or an MDC person, most likely in a place like Kopa or Machongwe or Ngangu. All those cards were taken away. And nobody is thinking about party right now. They are thinking about food. They are thinking about shelter. They are thinking about medicine. And as I indicated to you, Brian James was a mayor of Mutare, the MDC mayor of Mutare. We went and we were working with him. There is no question. 2 days ago, I received a group of mayors. They came and met here. And as you know, all the mayors are MDC. They met here. I received them. I never uttered a word about mayors or MDC. I'm uttering it now because you are forcing me to. But Zimbabweans should learn to say when there is a calamity, everybody, irregardless of their political affiliation, must be able to help. So when other people see somebody helping and maybe they are using a car which is the logo ZANU-PF, all of a sudden you are hijacking. But when I'm working with Brian James, coordinating with him, he is even at one of our forward depot in Wengezi. Nobody thinks about it, and we are not thinking about it as government because we are focused on helping our people. We are not focused on helping party people. We are focused on helping people.
But then the question that can be asked is, can there be, say, in some instances, it said, okay, because it can be divisive, can we ban people wearing party regalia at even when they're helping out?
Surely, in some cases, this party regalia, and the way it was distributed, for some child in an area, that is their shirt. and you go, and this guy is working very hard to help, and you say, go and remove a shirt because it is announcing a party. That will not help us in this situation. Zimbabweans must learn to tolerate, to say, I can be helped by an MDC person who is wearing an MDC shirt, but if it is not offensive to what he is helping me with, I should go ahead and get the goods that he is bringing. So I know that this is not being done by individuals who are receiving these things. This is sensationalized in the social media in some cases. This is sensationalized in the media itself, even normal media like yourselves. But this is the time when we should be encouraging each other through social media, through all kinds of media, to say, as Zimbabweans, let's alleviate this suffering, because the people who are suffering cannot be thinking about party. They can only be thinking about how they want to be helped. But in fact, I think if you went and were thinking about party to people who are hungry, they will look at you without a smile. They will look at you as if you are mocking them. So nobody is encouraged to do that. If there is any abuse, we should nip it in the bud, irregardless of what party is involved.
So in the instance, now this opens up a fissure in which someone can decide, okay, I'm going to wear my party regalia, and my excuse is going to be, well, it's the only shirt I have. How do we deal with that sort of situation? Because remember, we're dealing with a trust deficit at the moment.
If the trust is with you, the people out there are wanting help.
True, I agree with you. I've gotten your part, but
you
I'm saying
are now
that
wanting to instill it into people. Let's unite Zimbabweans.
And I'm agreeing. And I'm agreeing 100%. I'm agreeing with you 100%. And I think you've stated your position very well. But how do we deal with that loophole where somebody decides, okay, I'm going to push my own agenda, whatever the case may be, so that there are people who will do that.
You denounce it. You use the media to denounce such activities, especially when people are suffering.
So we're denouncing it at the moment?
Yes, we're denouncing it. We denounce anybody who will use this opportunity to further any political agenda.
0731 168 045. We're going to take our final break. I want to come back after the break. I want to get your calls. I saw somebody, a couple of people trying to call in, but your calls keep dropping because I was trying to get you on radio. So please keep trying to call on 0772 168 045. What have you been seeing on the ground? And we've been having the chat with the Honorable Minister here and trying to get our head around the issues in as far as this is concerned. Are you satisfied with the explanations in as far as the Cyclone Idai response is concerned? Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
You're still tuned into ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. Right now, in the last segment, I'm going to be giving a lookout for your phone calls. I'm getting as many calls as I can, in as far as this discussion is concerned, on 0772 168 045. And if you're outside the country, just drop the zero right at the beginning and replace it with +263. The going forward, yes, this is a very good question around. Yesterday we had a couple of experts in here. What livestock, wildlife and things of that nature, what has been done in as far as trying to save or to mitigate what might happen with situations of that nature?
Our architects people were telling us they've counted is over 1,300 cattle which have been taken, so many goats, so many sheep, chicken they have been taken. So going forward, we have already said the Minister of Agriculture was there, and we know that losing livestock, especially cattle, you are losing draft power, and fortunately we have this command livestock, and we are going to move in and use command livestock to restock. There are also many losses.
I just want to get this call in and we'll carry on with your point, or respond to the call-in question. You're live with ZFM Stereo. What's your name, contribution, are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, what's your contribution?
My contribution, we are stuck in residu, man. Can they give us anything they can give, whether it's cooking oil or something? We are stuck in residu.
That's good.
Okay, is that all you want to contribute so I can get the Honorable Minister to respond?
Please, we are stuck. People who are stuck in the city, man. Please, cooking oil, food, mill, anything.
Okay, thank you for your contribution.
No, thank you for your alert. I will relay as soon as I come out of here, and if Risutu is not reached by cars, as I think it is, we'll make sure that somebody will go and drop food there. Fortunately, now we have a World Food Program aeroplane which started working, which at least has a capacity to go and drop 3 tons. We were using small helicopters which were dropping in some cases less than one ton, and we know that even that 3 ton will not be enough, but we can start having more runs to places like Risutu and the Chikokwa area, where I know is still not passable.
You're live on ZFM Stereo. What's your name? Okay, we've lost that call. Please do try and call back again on 0772 168 045. While we wait for that, you were quoted in a statement as saying 40,000 people are going to need food access and support. Is that correct?
That is correct from our assessment, a quick assessment that we have done. Remember, the crops were damaged. So we are not just looking at people who were hit by the cyclone, but the crops were also damaged.
Let's get this call in. You're live on ZFM Stereo. What's your name, contribution, and where are you calling from?
Yeah, well, my name is Farah Mareza. I'm from Mambra.
Please go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to say to the minister, thank you very much for the job well done. What I wanted just to ask is, how much help are you getting from other countries, on the ground, more like the choppers, which can go around to where they are not accessible? Then what about the sniffer dogs? You see, we just heard on the social media, I don't know how true is that. Are you going to get them? Or here in Zimbabwe, we don't have such sniffer dogs. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your contribution. So the two questions there, how much help are we getting from other countries, and the dogs that, the sniffer dogs, are we getting those?
Yes. No, we are getting assistance from all our neighbors in SADC. Tanzanian supplies have already come. Today, tomorrow morning, we'll be receiving donations from Botswana. Zambia has sent some. South Africa has concentrated, yes, private sector. We have hired helicopters from South Africa. I think we have four or five helicopters that are operating in Mtare, going into Chimanimani area. This is help that is coming from our neighbors. The dogs that I talked about initially, some of the dogs have already arrived, and we are pushing. They didn't even want to sleep here in Harare because they want to be in the theater of practice, and we have given people who have taken them to Mtare. They want to be on the ground tomorrow morning, and our people with the Air Force, because we are taking them to areas that might be, not be passable, the Air Force and the helicopters are ready to take them to Kopas, especially because this is the hardest hit area. We're expecting another team with four teams, search teams, rescue and search teams, which will also arrive tomorrow, and will quickly take them to the areas which we believe people are still underground.
Let's take this call. You're live on ZFM Stereo. What's your name, contribution, and where are you calling from?
Yes, I'm Ola Marufu. I'm calling you from Harare. Just want to thank the minister for working so hard on that. Expect criticism. It always happens. People look for bad things within their good things. But keep up the good work, and God bless you. Bye.
Thank you for your contribution.
Thank you very much.
Okay. 0772-168-045. Like I said, I want to get as many of your calls to come in before we finish in the next 6 minutes. That's our phone number that's open right now, a phone line being 0772-168-045. Now, we were talking about the number of people that have been affected that will need food aid. And this is a year in which we had suppressed agriculture. What is the status, and as far as this disaster having it taken place, and now how are we going to be able to assist with, and are we going to rely a lot more on aid than normal?
No, we think that we will rely on ourselves as Zimbabweans, because there are some food surplus areas, and given the year that we are coming from, and the success of Command Agriculture, we think that will go a long way using our own resources. But going forward, we are going to make an appeal. Maybe in the next 2 days, we are going to make an international appeal because of this disaster. We will appeal for food aid. We will appeal for non-food aid. But we will also focus on recovery. Recovery of the bridges, recovery of the agriculture in the area, recovery of the industries in the area. We are talking about people, but we are forgetting that we have disrupted all commerce and industry in that area, and no shops, and people are going to be relying on handouts, but it is not sustainable. So we are also looking at the recovery of industry, of shops, of commerce, of horticulture, for instance, macadamia trees, and other horticultural things are in the area. Our forestry is mostly in that area, and we are looking at all those things so that we can have strategies for recovery.
So given that sort of aspect, we need to ask, do we have a thumbsuck or at least some assessment of the extent of the infrastructure damage at the moment?
We have an assessment, but as I said to you, 11 bridges have been breached in the area. We are getting the actual figures. We have sent teams, and we will have the actual figures of each bridge, how much we need. The roads have been damaged, and the crops have been damaged. We are not having thumbsucks. The schools, the assessment has already been done, and monies have been allocated. The clinics, assessment have been done. So there are assessments. Our people have been working almost 24 hours, and that's why, as I said, Air Chief Marshal retired parents, she said, I didn't know that civilians can work as hard as the Army and the Air Force do when they are faced with disasters of this nature.
Do we have an estimate?
We will have an estimate in our appeal in the next 2 days.
Okay, so we'll have an estimate in the next 2 days. 0772-168-045. While I'm waiting for a call, I want to get at least two calls to get in the last couple of minutes, so we might interrupt you as you speak.
No problem.
I want to help, say, so maybe I'm in construction, and all I know how to do is construction. I don't necessarily have money, or maybe whatever the case may be, what do I do?
You bring your construction equipment, as they did. Masimba Holdings, Masimba Construction brought their...
Okay, well, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you for that, but we're going to carry on with that. You're live on ZFM Stereo. What's your name, contribution, where are you calling from?
Okay, fine. I'm calling from Harare. I would like to thank the minister for explaining the issue of mudslide. And no one knows how much mudslide will be there in any circumstance. And that is a fundamental point which we were accusing the government for preparedness. But I really thank the minister for coming through and explaining that to us. And going forward, I think we'll be better people, and we can mitigate these issues together. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so carry on.
I was explaining. What was I explaining?
We're explaining what people can do. So you're talking about Masimba Holdings, for example.
Yes, Masimba Construction, for instance, brought their equipment, and working together with people from Green Forest, from Zimbabwe Consolidated Diamond Mining, from Bitumen World, unsupervised. They actually are the ones who repaired the road that was damaged. They repaired two bridges, and they are going on. They have given access to us so that we can reach a place called Peacock that will give us access to Copper, that will give us access to Machongwe, which are the hard hit areas. And finally, I think they will give us access to Ngandu area. The Chinese, at Skyline, it was heavily damaged, and we thought it was going to take long. They have gone in there, and today we were being given good news that they have destroyed the mountain so that trucks can pass through. We still have another bridge to go to Nyaode, and they are saying to us, we will do it.
Okay, let's just get this call in. Final call for this evening. You're live on ZFM Stereo. What's your name, contribution, and where you're calling from?
Good day, how are you? My name is Eddie. I'm calling from Harare. I would like to thank our Honorable Minister for being present at this moment in time. And thank him also for all the job that he has been doing. It's really much appreciated, Honorable Minister. I've got a question and a contribution. My first question, I don't know, probably you could have answered it some time before. Do we really have a disaster fund as the government of Zimbabwe to cater for these situations? And then my contribution is, I intend to take some leave in about three, four days' time. What should I do so that I will be able to access the affected areas for voluntary assistance? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And just to add on that, I love the way Zimbabweans have just wanted to volunteer. Yeah. I'm just going to say that once again, okay. But carry on.
No, thank you very much. If you want to access the area, you can go to Mtare to our provincial administrator's offices. They will tell you where you can go, where there is demand, if it is possible. If it is not possible, we have had to take some people, volunteer doctors, for instance. We had to airlift them through helicopters so that we could drop them at clinics which needed help. I'm sure that if you go to Mtare and go to our PA's offices, there will be somebody who will take you to where you need to go so that you can go and assist our people. We have been very much happy about the assistance that we have got. We have seen children come with their clothes into and drop them in the PA's office. Some are dropping them at their places of work. Even when we went to receive food from Zayoja, the most touching thing is that it's not Zayoja as the corporate church, but individuals who were saying, no, I want mine to register my own. So individuals, corporates, have been assisting us. And we think that this is the way Zimbabweans should react when their own are in trouble.
Honorable Minister, before we leave, there was the question about, is there a disaster fund? That's the last one.
There is a disaster fund, as I said, which is controlled by the Minister of Finance. We have had many disasters in the last year and this year, and that disaster fund has helped us a lot. It is replenished either through donations or through the Ministry of Finance itself putting money into it. I said they've already put 50 million for now so that we could quickly intervene, and I'm sure that they will put some more. The Chinese have given us over $800 US in which we have put in a Nostro account. So for instance, today when we were under pressure to buy Jet A1 so that the planes or the helicopters that use Jet A1 that have been given by people to us, instead of keeping them on the ground, we had to use that money from our Nostro account so that we can buy Jet A1. So we will account for the monies that are coming from the Minister of Finance, because it has orders from the President to say be strict on the use of money.
So at the end of this, we expect a report that's going to tell us what happened.
No, we do it. If I had known, I would show you the balance sheet of what we used last week in Manicaland.
Okay, finally, before we go, we've gone a little bit over time, but I do really want to get in. What assurances from the nation do we get, for example, that beyond this, because normally there is a push around the tragedy itself, and then communities sometimes are left to fend for themselves after the event. What assurances are there that we're in this in the long haul, we're going to be with the people of Chimanimani going forward until the region is restored?
First, the President is saying, out of this disaster, we must have lessons learned. Two, we must start looking at how we move forward in terms of our shelter policy, how we build our houses. Thirdly, we have said there is post-traumatic counseling that is needed, and that post-traumatic counseling is going to be needed for school children. We have seen it all. It is going to be needed for families where you have lost everyone, and you either the only mother or the only child. So we have set up this as a long-term thing. And lastly, what is our long-term strategy of making sure that life comes to normal in agriculture, in livestock, in infrastructure, in everything that has to be done? The President said, let's use this as a way of preparing the people of Chimanimani to come back into their normal life.
I always say in things of this nature, less blame and more progress. And I've seen such loving contributions from Zimbabweans across the line. There's so many people that contributed here as ZFM Stereo to this cause. And thank you very much for joining us here on ZFM Stereo. You're always welcome to come into the station to explain to the nation things of this importance so that we're not rumor-mongering and dealing with the real issues. So that's the chairperson of the Cabinet Committee on Environmental Disaster Prevention and Management, Honorable July Mohe. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for Zimbabweans for giving so handsomely to the people of Chimanimani and the people in all the districts that have been affected by Cyclone Idai. Unfortunately, the name is Idai.
I'll be back in a few minutes. We're going to take a quick break. I'll be back with Health Matters, and we are discussing World TB Day. I've got two guests in the studio to tell us what the government is doing as far as dealing with this scourge.